WFSU-FM now presents a delayed broadcast of the luncheon meeting of NEBA, the Network of Entrepreneurs and Business Advocates. This meeting was held on January 22, 2019, at the Capital City Country Club in Tallahassee. Now, to introduce the program, here's NEBA President Catherine Baer.
So, do we have any new members here today? Anybody here for the first time as a new member? Okay. How about guests?
I'm a guest.
You're a guest. Would you care to introduce your guest, Cheryl?
This is my husband, Stephen Webster.
Yes, sir.
Tony Minichello, retired printer.
Good to have you. Hi, Michelle. Good to have you. Thank you. Any other guests?
Right here.
Yes.
I'm Manny Joannis. I want to introduce my son, Captain Zachary Joannis, just back from Iraq.
Glad to have you, sir. Thank you for your service. Any other guests today? No other guests. I'd like to recognize people at the head table. Over here we have Rocky Beavis. Beavis Funeral Home is one of our board members. Everyone knows Ted Thomas, and then Senator Monford, and Doug Wheeler, who is our incoming president. He'll be president next year. And I did not introduce myself. My name is Catherine Baer, and I am the president this year. I know that you guys are used to seeing Will Crowley up here. He's been here for 2 years now. And isn't it a nice change? Too bad he wasn't here to see that, but we've got it on video. All right, so I'm done for right now, so I'm going to let Ted Thomas. And Ted Thomas was our previous program director. He has stepped down, and Will Crowley, our past president, is going to be taking his spot, but he copped out for today, so we've got Ted again. Sorry about that.
This is your lucky day, Catherine. You just don't know it. Manny, I'm delighted to see you here, and I'm delighted to see your son. I'm just as happy as you because my grandson just returned from Afghanistan, so I know how you feel. It's my pride, and it is our relief, too. So, our speaker today is Senator Bill Mumford. I'm not going to give you a long introduction, and I won't let him eat his dinner either until afterwards. So, but let me just give you a little bio on Senator Mumford. He's elected to his position, I believe, in 2010. Is that correct, Bill? Prior to that, he was elected to the Leon County School Superintendent's job. He was a Leon County Commissioner. He was a principal at Lincoln and Godby High School. He was an assistant principal. He was a math teacher. And Bill has a bachelor's and master's degree from Florida State University and an AA degree from Chipola. So he's one of our junior college folks that transitioned over to FSU. So Bill Mumford will be term limited out in 2020. A lot of people are wondering what he's going to be doing. But I heard by the grapevine, very, very serious source, that he's going to be moving back to his hometown in Blountstown and running for mayor. So just keep that in mind. So, Commissioner, Senator Mumford, thanks for coming, Bill. We're delighted to have you.
Thank you. You know, the truth is, I've always wanted to be a mayor. And I'm already an honorary mayor of Blountstown and Bristol and Two Egg and a whole bunch of other places. But thank you for inviting me today. You all know why I'm here, because the other speaker wouldn't show up. He was called back to Washington up there, so you know, I'm easy. So Rocky called me, and I said, yeah, I'd love to do that. And And I said, but, you know, we'll try to, you know, make sure to change the schedule a little bit. And we did, I'm here, I'm glad to be here. How much time do I have?
You have about...
30 minutes.
Somebody said 3:30.
And we'll take questions after that.
And questions, okay. I'm going to skim across the top of several things and save as much time as I can for questions. And for your grandson and Zach, though, I think we just need to pause for a moment and say how grateful we are for them, for their service, and to live in a country that we live in. And I know sometimes I'm just as guilty as everybody else. I don't pause long enough to be thankful for living in a country that we live in. It's because people have sacrificed to ensure that we can do that. Zach, it's good to have you back. I still remember you and going up down the steps of the baseball game, FSU, selling bags of peanuts. Remember that? And then your daddy would take half the profits. I remember that too. Okay, let's get down to business. This is my ninth session. It really seems like I just got started. But it's been a pleasure to serve in the Senate, and it's been an honor for you to have allowed me to represent you. I do have 11 counties. I have the largest Senate district in the state, two time zones, about 200 miles from one end to the other. I've got Taylor, Hamilton, Jefferson, Madison, Leon, Wakulla, Franklin, Gulf, Calhoun, Liberty, and Gaston. Is that right, Taylor? Taylor's my aide up here. I found her about five years ago. I'll tell you a real quick story, and then we'll get on down to business. She's from Kansas. That's the first day on the job. We were going to the prisons in Gulf County. We were the bridge between Bristol and Blountstown, you know. And we were going up the bridge, and it was foggy. And I was working, she was driving, and she made some funny noise. And I looked over at her, she just looked real strange. And she said, "Does this bridge go over water?" And I said, "Well, yeah." And she said, "I think I'm gonna pass out." I said, "Get it in the middle, just straddle the line there." And coming back, I drove across her. But she's truly been a blessing to me. So she's here to make sure I don't say anything that's not accurate. If you look at committee assignments in the Senate, even though I'm a Democrat and a Republican-controlled Senate, I truly believe I've got, if you look at all committee assignments of all 40 senators, I think I've got the best group of committee assignments. I really believe that. I'm chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, which is a pretty good committee to have. Vice chair of Education on Agriculture, Appropriations Subcommittee on Education, on the Rules Committee, and then a Joint Legislative Audit Committee. So that's where I am for next 2 years. So let me jump right in. Let's talk about rural counties for just a moment. Rural counties, before the hurricane, they were in a crisis throughout the state. If you remember, the State Chamber of Commerce did an exhaustive study, and the results came out a few months ago that said in the 30-something rural counties in this state have fewer jobs today than they did 5 years ago. Now let that soak in. Fewer jobs today than they did 5 years ago. Some of us have been saying to the previous governor and others, "Hey, we appreciate you bringing the jobs, but they're not coming to North Florida. So we've got to do something for rural Florida." It doesn't matter if it's infrastructure, if it's health care, if it's education, it really doesn't matter. So what's the problem? I'm not sure it's a problem, but the fact is, if you look at the taxing basis for these districts, they're hurting. One mill in Liberty County raises $175,000. One mill in Leon raises a little less than $20 million, and Leon is not rich. So if you look at all these rural counties, the millage just doesn't bring in enough money to provide what government services that they need. I'm talking about bare minimum services. It's talking about roads, talking about bridges, and even though the state participates in that, there are a lot of local needs that just cannot be met. Focus on health care just for a moment. If you look at the health care needs in these rural counties, primary care in most of these counties are really, really hurting. Take Calhoun County, for example, the hospital there, Calhoun Liberty Hospital bridge, the roof blew off the bridge and off the hospital in the hurricane. And so we got in trying to say, okay, you're already in financial difficulty. Let's see why. Because the question is, and some said, let's just close it down. Well, if you close down that hospital, you're really closing down your primary care and your emergency needs. They take in a little less than 1,000 people a month in that little hospital just in the emergency room, 1,000. Most of that is primary care. 80-something percent of it is no pay. So when the hurricane came and the bed, there were no income coming, they're just about bankrupt. Thank goodness the state stepped in and we got enough money going now to at least keep them going to try to preserve that hospital. Okay, let's talk about the hurricane for a moment. Just showing how many of you have seen it firsthand? Just like the good, that's good. Then you know what it's like. Pictures and words really cannot describe exactly what the devastation is. It's just horrific. And it's not just Bay County and Mexico Beach. It's inland as well. This storm was a very unique storm. When the National Hurricane, we've been told, we just left a committee, we've been told that when the National Hurricane Service evaluates this storm, they were reclassified as a 5 when it hit, and it was a 4 when it got to Jackson County. That is very, very unusual for a storm. And also, one of the reasons for that is, even though you had 157-mile-an-hour wind consistently, within that wind, there were other, I forgot what it's called, but anyway, at the Tyndall Air Base, they had wind measured up to 210 miles an hour at Tyndall. So that's why you have such devastation. Now let's look at what the impact will be, not just right now, but for years to come. If you look at the rural counties there, you got 3 main employers. You have school boards, you have prisons. I've got 9 prisons in my district. And you got timber. Now if you saw, and many of you did, you saw the devastation in terms of timber. Timber that was some of it 100 to 150 years old, saw timber, which was, you know, a valuable piece of product. So all of that's gone. I mean, even the saw timber, because it's broken and stressed, most of it had to be used for pulp. Now, pulp prices went down from $11 a ton to $1 a ton, beginning to creep back up. But how do you rebound from that kind of economic catastrophe, if you will? You got cotton, soybeans, all of that was wiped out as well. The good thing about that is some of you can get insurance on cotton and peanuts and soybeans. Can't get insurance on timber. Not only that, when you replant the cotton, peanuts, and so on, you can get your crop back up hopefully within a year. It'd be expensive, but you can get it going. The timber industry is different. It's 20 to 25 years before you can ever get any of that investment back. So what happens? We don't know. We just left a meeting an hour. What will the state do? What will the federal department do to help us to get back on our feet in terms of timber? Now, if you look at just the timber issue itself, on October the 9th, you had a piece of property that was a tremendous asset. October 11th, 2 days later, it's on the ground and almost worthless. There were some, I had some, I gave away. I said, if you'll just come get it, you can have it. But if you look at it, not only from an economic standpoint, but from a fire structure standpoint as well, there's so much timber on the ground that if a wildfire started, you can't even get the equipment in to fight the fire. We have a tremendous problem on our hands in terms of fire. Thank goodness since the storm, it's been wet. And so that's given us a little bit of time. But somehow, we've got to get in to all the timber. By the way, 85% of the timber loss belong to private individuals. Some said, well, most of it is in the national forest. Only 15% was state or national owned. The rest of it was owned by individuals. So the question then is how do you go back and replant it? We just were told it'd take about $1,000 an acre, probably, or more, to go in, remove the debris, and prep it for planting. Then you got to pay the court to get it to get replanted. And then you got to wait 20, 25 years for return on your money. So how many people, how many private individuals can afford to do that? And by the way, these counties that were hit has the highest poverty rate as anywhere in this state, highest poverty rate. There were a lot of people who had small stands of timber for their retirement. It was their 401k, if you will. Wake up the next day and it's gone. So can those people afford to replant? The answer to that is no. Then you go, we're talking about timber. Now let's talk about the hardwoods, for example. If you look at the Chipola River, for example, the eye of the storm went straight up Chipola River, Alpha, Marion, and so on. There's timber there that's 200 years old or older, hardwood, hickory, white oak things, and many of you have seen, you know what I'm talking about, hammocks, flattened, just gone. And so the question is, and I just asked the question, do we have a reforestation plan, if you will, for hammocks and lowlands? The answer to that is no. And we don't know exactly what to do. But also, if you look at the rivers, take the Chipola River, for example, we still have a flooding problem there. If you look at the graph of Northwest Florida Water Management District shared with you, even though there's a spike when you have a good rain, the hurricane was up here, but rather than going back to normal, it's still high, still flooded because there's so much debris on the ground and in the river, the water can't get out. So the question is, how do you harvest that? How do you get it out? So we've got a tremendous problem on our hand when it comes to the hurricane and how we'll go back. Talk about education just for a moment. You expect me to say that. Let me get that out of the way. The buzzwords and what we've been saying for the last several years, parental choice, okay? And who can argue with parental choice? I mean, unfortunately, sometimes parents may not have access to all the choices. And what do I mean by that? What I believe, we need to pause and let's take a look at what we've done for education the last 10, 12, 15 years. Let's slow down, let schools catch their breath. Let's see what's out there and what we've done. If you look at choice, take transportation, for example. The state pays about 40% of the cost of transportation, only 40. So, if you look at parents that have a choice, and I believe in parental choice, but I also believe that every parent should have an opportunity for every choice that's out there. Just because they don't have transportation should not limit them to take an opportunity for their children. So what we've got to do is, if we believe in choice, and we do, let's make sure that every choice is out there for tax dollars well spent. You've read and you've heard many, many instances where tax dollars were not used as they should have been. It's a money-making issue for a lot of people. We've got to reassess that. We've got to close those loopholes, and we've got to make sure that every child, every parent has an equal opportunity for all the options that are out there. Okay, I've talked fast. Let me see if you got any questions and we'll get into it. Yes, sir.
Last year, under a booming economy, the base student allocation went up 47 cents. And, you know, most of the money went to school safety. This was under a booming economy. What do we expect for public school classroom money for this next legislature?
Very good question. Let me dig just a little deeper into that. You heard last year that this was a record amount of money going into public education. I think it was $110 per student. Record amount. That is absolutely true. But the other piece of that, and what some people didn't follow up and say, that of that $110, $109.53 were already spent. So what happened is, school districts left with 47 cents to be able to cover increase in insurance and gas prices and so on and so forth. Where did the other $109.53 go? It went to school safety, and you can't argue with that. I mean, obviously, there was a need there. We need more money in school safety. But the fact is that the school district had the 47 cents to be able to cover the cost. Now, what will happen this year? We don't know. I'm on that subcommittee, and I'm on the appropriation committee as well. And there'll be, you know, we'll be out there asking for more money for public schools. But along with that, I think, again, we need to ensure that every tax dollar that we put into public education, which means charter schools, regular schools, scholarships, we need to ensure that every tax dollar is well spent and accounted for. Mm-hmm. That's where the rub is. It should be equal footing regardless of where those dollars are spent. They should be held accountable.
Grab my attention if you have a question. We'll go bring it back.
Hugh, excuse me. The next question is Rocky Beavis.
Hugh. Okay.
You don't mind, do you?
No, not at all.
I didn't think so. No. First, let me thank Bill. You guys.
Put the microphone close to your mouth.
First, let me thank Bill for rearranging his schedule. Taylor, we got on the phone with Taylor and Bill, and we appreciate it, Bill. Secondly, let me tell everybody, Bill and I used to play a lot of racquetball about 40 years ago.
I still do. I don't know what happened to you.
Sometimes twice a day. He never beat me, guys. Never.
Yeah. Who believes that? I mean, look at him. Look at me.
My sister would beat both of us like a drum, but... Bill, I read your fracking bill the other day. I congratulate you. I don't want to, you know, make anybody mad, but my daddy would be proud of you. I know you and daddy had a lot of conversations about water problems in Florida, but I congratulate you on your fracking bill. Where do you think it's going to go?
Thanks for that question. Let's talk just a minute about fracking. I'm not sure if there's a more, that's one of the most sensitive issues that we'll be addressing. I think we've got a pretty good chance of getting it passed this year. You know, we passed it before in the Senate. The governor, to his credit, he has already spoken out on environmental issues. His wife has as well. So I think we've got a good chance of doing that. And I think that it's time, and I've said all along, that Florida should be the last state to engage in fracking. I mean, it's just, I know that, you know, it produces a lot of oil and gas, but the risk of that is just something that I don't think this state deserves. And my bill is a little different in fracking. What this will do, we as a state will say that this is a threat to groundwater. And that's the biggest issue. And if we can get that done, if we can get that passed, our children and grandchildren can rest easy. Will there be opposition to that? Yes. A senator came to me this morning and said, "Hey, I read your bill. I want to talk to you about it." He said, "Now, you know, I've got the only county and state that really produces a lot of oil and gas." And I said, "Well, I didn't expect you to vote for it anyway, but come on by. I might be able to convince you of that." But I think we've got a good chance. I think the timing is right. I think people understand more now than they did a couple of years ago about the threat of fracking and other issues. We got another issue we need to talk about, and that's the deep well injections. You know, there's a school of thought, and it's been done already, to take all your contaminated water, forget fracking, but other water, and inject it far below the aquifer. And so it'll be stored down there. That makes me nervous. It just makes me nervous. So we'll be taking a look at that in the committee that I chair.
This is back to schools.
Yep.
And I know a few years ago there was a law that allowed students to cross county lines to enroll in schools. And Leon County now has a lot of children from surrounding counties in our school district. I'm concerned that Leon County is going to become the school district for these surrounding counties. Is there any, do you want to comment on that, Bill, and
yeah,
if it needs changing?
Well, a lot of people don't realize is you can go to school anywhere you want to in Florida. I mean, you can live here and go to school in Miami, but of course that doesn't make sense unless you got a Learjet. But that's the law. So how does it working out? Well, one of the first things that popped up, one of the first, was the superintendent from St. John's County coming, which is the highest performing school district in Florida. And they have part of that St. John's County is Ponte Vedra. Okay? Now, if y'all know Ponte Vedra, it's not like Lunchtown. Okay? Ponte Vedra, they don't depend on timber. You know, they've got other ways. But Ponte Vedra taxed themselves an additional tax for schools. And they're going to build new schools, state-of-the-art schools, and so on and so forth, and they were on it. So the superintendent said he had a group coming from Ponte Vedra and said, now hold on just a minute. We're paying all these high taxes, and we're going to be taking students from Duval County over here, and they don't bring the money with them. In other words, whatever taxes they involve, so we're going to be educating children that we're paying taxes for. Is that the way this works? And he said, yes. And he said, well, what are you going to do about it? He said, I'm going to call my senator. So he called me. And I said, well, you better talk to the Republican leadership, you know. And let's you know, I was kidding around with him. But here's the way it worked. On a local basis, you can cap the school, if you will. You give preference to those children who live in that area. So the results of that bill, even though it sounds, you can go anywhere you want to kind of thing, but the fact is that most of the schools where you would want, some children may want their children, is they're capped. And they just, you know, so there's no room in the end, so to speak. But, you know, it's you know, you go far, you go, well, I don't get off on that. Give me another question.
Right there.
Senator, you finally moved me up to the fourth floor. You got a big broad view across the Capitol. How about that?
Senator.
Your fourth floor, you're on the fourth floor now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you moved upstairs. I like that. Yeah. Question for you. You're in natural resources. How much of the water problem in Florida, and for that matter, the timber and other issues, how much of that would you place at the feet of Army Corps, and what do you think can be done about Army Corps slowing up restoration, all sorts of activities in this state?
If you didn't know, I don't know if y'all could hear his question, he will know how I got to be so smart so quick. The latter part of that question was about Army Corps engineers. We know that sometimes working with the federal government takes a lot of time. And I mean, we're still waiting on money from Hurricane Irma to get back from FEMA. But the Army Corps engineers, is, you know, if you look at Lake Okeechobee, if you look at the Apalachicola River, we have issues with that. Somehow we've got to speed that up. And Congressman Dunn, I think, will, you know, he's well aware of that, and I know that's is a burr under his saddle. So I'm hoping that, and I'm confident he'll be loud. He'll have a loud, clear voice to change that. Okay.
Hello, Senator. How are you doing?
Where are you?
I'm right here.
Oh,
it's Michelle.
I thought I recognized that voice.
And I've been sitting here, Senator Brett Evers' spirit sort of floated around, and he was suggesting to me hemp as a solution to what's going on in Northwest Florida. I think if he was here, that's what he would be talking about. We looked at him when I was on the Ag Natural Resources as a ranking member to supplant when we had citrus greening, to maybe supplant that crop or at least add some. And now with pine, can we add hemp to the mix? Because it, you know, when it gets flattened, it'll grow back up and you don't have to wait 20 or 30 years. You wait 2, 3, 4 months. So in Greg Evers' spirit, answer that question. Yeah.
The issue of hemp, many of us feel a whole lot more comfortable with hemp than we did just a few years ago. In fact, you know, you can make ropes, you can make pants out of it. We keep people trying to tear off the bottom of the pants and smoke it. That wouldn't work. Aiden Boone back there, he'd put you in jail. But I think if you look at hemp, there's a tremendous possibility there. Not just for North Florida, but for all of Florida. I had a bill last year that passed, and it gave University of Florida, Florida A&M, the lead on that, if you will, to go ahead and do some research on it. You'd be surprised at the number of small landowners who have called, especially since the hurricane, had said, you know, can we get into the hemp business? And so there's a tremendous amount of interest in that. So I think 10 years from now, I think we'll be real surprised how far we've gone in terms of production of hemp and the uses of that. It's going to be a good money crop for a lot of people. I hope that we don't get bogged down with that like we have with medical marijuana. And so far we've been able to steer away from that controversy. So I think the future of hemp is really, really good, positive.
Question back here.
Bill Marshall.
Yeah.
How much help are you getting from the federal government in relation to clearing roads and getting Mexico Beach back on a go-forward basis? And are there some federal loans and whatnot to help these farmers and these timber people so they at least clear roads on their properties and get something so that if we do have a dry fall, that we're ready to go?
Good question. We're getting some help from federal government, more than we anticipated, quite frankly. But I think that was more the people just saw the need. It was a life and death issue a lot of time for people. The governor, of course, called out the National Guard. They were there. I got a call from the sheriff from Bluntstown, and he said, hey, we got the National Guard people over here, and they're clearing your state highway. I need some help getting people out of the woods. Can I use them? And I said, yes, take them. And we'll worry about that later. And it was that kind of attitude. I called the state and I said, look, if the sheriff over there is taking some National Guard now, they're going taking equipment to get down some road to get people out, because it was a matter of life and death. And I said, so if anybody gets in trouble, call me, not the sheriff. And everybody said, that's fine. And so I think what has come out, the good thing about this hurricane is the response that we have received in North Florida from all over the state. A tremendous outpouring of assistance and help, and it's worked. The state's forestry department, all of them have just gone way out of the lane, if you will, to be of help. There are still areas, though, that we've got to clear roads. And I go back to the forest fire issue. If we don't get those, if we don't have access to that, they simply won't be able to stop that fire. There is, I got an area, I forgot. There's 71.93 million tons, 71 million tons of debris on the ground. Now think about that for a minute. Let's talk about debris just for a second. Give you an idea about this storm. There was 1.7 million cubic yards of debris picked up from Irma, 1.7 million cubic yards. There were 27 million cubic yards already picked up from Bay County alone. Now think about that. And another statistic they gave us was, if you take all of the storms combined in the last 12 years, all of the debris is less than what's already been picked up in these counties west of us. And they're just making a dent in it. Let me tell you why. If you went over a week after the storm on the road, you saw all the limbs and the logs and all, and they were picking them up. If you go over there now, what you see are huge stumps, trees that were 100, 200 years old, huge. They're just now getting them out, okay, and putting them on the road. So the debris issue is just, it's projected that it will cost $1 billion just for debris, $1 billion just for debris. This part of Florida is different, and y'all know that. It's hard sometimes for my colleague from Central South Florida to comprehend the difference. It's just different here. Okay, give me another one.
All right, Curtis has a good question.
You put a lot of pressure on me. I think that's
all your questions, Curtis, have always been good.
Senator, you had mentioned something about your concern over deep well injection, yep, which is, you know, below the aquifer.
Yes.
What about above it, where for the last few years I know I've been concerned about, you know, extending central sewer and a lot of these areas where we've been relying, historically been relying upon septic tanks for our wastewater disposal. Do you see any movement at the state level to start taking up more of the responsibility for helping to deal with that
yep.
issue?
I'm so glad I didn't, that wasn't a planted question, but thank you. Yeah. I've got a bill too. I heard about this bill from one of my colleagues in South Florida, asked for $50 million for septic tank and refurbization all around Lake Okeechobee. And I said, well, you know, we pay taxes in North Florida. So I've got a real comprehensive bill, help me out, Taylor. It's $50 million of Amendment 1 money that for 7 years, that's a lot of money, to be spent in North Florida for those very issues, septic tank, to address the septic tank issues, all the issues that have an impact on our environment. Now, I just, a reporter stopped me after this last meeting and said, I want to talk to you about your bill. He said, do you really think that that's what the voters wanted when we voted for Amendment 1? And I said, well, let's talk about that for a minute. Let's talk about it from an environmental standpoint. If you really want to look at what we shouldn't do, look south. If you really want to look what we have here, and we don't want to do what we did in the south, then we need, local government can't do it. We need, the state has an obligation to step in. The people voted for Amendment 1 overwhelmingly. It was an acquisition of land and so on, but the whole purpose of that was from an environmental standpoint. So my bill, $50 million for 7 years, will be spent focused on environment. What better way is it to protect our environment than to address the sewer problem? Think about it for a minute. If we don't do something, we will continue to slide backward. The city, the government, the county government here should be complimented on the steps already taken for in south part of Leon County, Brian, to help address that issue. They've done a marvelous job of that already. But they need some help, and all governments can't do what we've done in this county. Good question. Thank you.
I know this is a smart question.
I actually have two unrelated questions. The first is the Rebuild 850 group coordinating at all with the legislature on their activities versus what is happening there? And then part B is the legislature going to address the problems that are caused in law enforcement right now with the passing of the Victims Advocate law not releasing a lot of information?
Yeah. The first question was Rebuild 850. That is an effort and initiative that started with former Speaker Bentz and Weatherford. And they called us and we got a group together and they were spearheaded this and said, this is a way, you know, to coordinate the efforts, the private efforts, if you will. And now since then, former Congressman Graham has joined that team. So there, you know, three.
She's speaking here cheers. Next month on that.
Next month. He should be here next month. I just called her and asked her to come. Am I quick? Good. I'll take credit for that. They're trying to coordinate. But, you know, it's a massive job just to coordinate everybody's good intentions. I mean, one of the problems we had in Bluntstown, for example, people showing up, and we had a whole warehouse full of stuff, and which is not complaining, but it's a matter of how do you coordinate all that. So I'm hoping that Rebuild 850 will continue to take a lead in that, try to coordinate that, including state efforts. So what I have said, and so far we haven't been able to do it, but it's like the oil spill. But this, what I suggested we do is let's get a group together and let's hire somebody to staff it. Call them a czar, okay? I'd like to have one person accountable for all of this to coordinate everything that's going on with the government and with the private agencies as well. So what, if there's so many people and there's so many problems out there, how do you coordinate that? I'd like to have one person up here. Of course, when I discussed this with Senate President, he said, well, you're chair of the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee. That sounded like your job. I said, wait a minute, you know? I can't do that. I mean, I can't, one person like myself can't do that. But he said, well, what about all three of you, meaning the three? We only have, by the way, three senators in North Florida, three, and there's six in Miami-Dade alone, okay? So we all, three of us, stick together up here. This one person, one vote does not work for us up here. We need a weighted vote, which won't happen. But anyway, the rebuild 850 should work, and it should be an effort to coordinate with those three people leading that. I think you'll see a good result. I mean, they're already doing a good job. They got money coming in, and so it's a question now for them, I think, of how do you distribute that and how do you coordinate it. And your second question was, I forgot.
About providing clarity to the.
The issue, I think you're probably referring to what popped up in north of town where there's no information given out, you know. Yeah, you're right. Somehow, and somebody will file a bill, either I will or somebody, because it's happened around the state as well. But the intent was to protect the victim. The problem we have, though, is there's different interpretation of that. So I think we have an obligation to come in and provide some clarity to that. And somebody will do that. If I don't, somebody will.
Senator, were our North Florida Springs impacted by Hurricane Michael?
What's that?
Was our North Florida Springs, our natural springs, were they impacted?
The question is, were the springs impacted? Not as much now, but they will if we don't address the debris. For example, if you take the Chipola River, for example, we talked about how do you physically get all that timber, logs that are in the river and out in the woods, holding the water back, still flooding home. How do you get that out? And then what do you do with it? The state's response there when I met with them was, we've got state land there, look and tremble. So, you know, if we can get it out, we can put it there and burn it. And I said, well, if you burn it, the ashes will get back in the river and they will pollute the springs. So that's why it's a good, thank you for that. That's why everybody needs to vote for my bill, about $50 million for 7 years up here. We'll get the money to protect the springs. It's environment, don't y'all agree? Yeah, amen. Wait a minute, I had somebody out there somewhere should say amen.
Amen!
Yeah, I like that, okay. I'm on a roll.
Hey Bill, I got a follow-up question to your discussion about legislation on hurricane recovery. Can you give us some specifics of what's happening as far as specific legislation and the kind of dollars you see going to this recovery effort from the state?
Yes. We're looking at, in addition to my really good bill of $50 million for 7 years, there are some other bills out there as well, and that is to increase the funding for the Ag Department, Florida, the Forestry Department, and others, because we're trying to increase their funding so they can buy equipment, quite frankly, and hire personnel to be able to get in and clean up. That's one way. The other way is to work in the federal government trying to increase the percent of participation in terms of reforestation. Right now there's a 75-25 split for reforestation. I asked the gentleman this morning, I said, well, is there a way that, I said, understand that highest poverty rates over there and you got people who were depending on this for their retirement, they don't have $1,000 an acre to go back in and do that. Is it possible for us to do that? And they said yes. So we're looking at increasing that so we can help the people clear the land, prep it, and get it replanted. So I think there's a good possibility that we'll see additional funding.
Senator, over here, a couple of questions just around elections.
I'm not up for real.
No, it's not about your elections. These are the easy questions.
You're talking about Halls of a series.
Well, so that's one. So I'd like to, as a local, take your senator hat off and just talk a little bit about the election results here locally. New mayor, a lot of new commissioners on. And then Halsey race is getting a little contested between Watkins and Shope. So didn't know if you had a stake in that. And then we'd love to hear your thoughts on the Governor DeSantis out of the gate. He's really kind of been doing a lot. Just get your thoughts on that.
Okay. Well, let's take last one first. Let's take the governor. I'm one of those that not surprised, but maybe surprised, pleasantly surprised at some of the initiatives that he's taken. His first day on the job, when get all the all the celebration out of the way. First day on the job, he went to Northwest Florida. He spent the day there, touring the areas and taking good notes. And then a week later, I think it was probably Tuesday, I got a call late Tuesday night, late in the afternoon, and said, can you meet the governor of Blountown tomorrow morning? And I said, yeah. So he went to North Florida to address the hurricane issues 2 days in his first week. And so I'm a little biased, but I think that's a good place for him to be. He also, in the meeting in Blountstown, you know, I took the opportunity to say to him what we said here, you know, about the poverty rate and also what I said, local governments are broke. If you look at these rural counties, they're broke. They have no money. They have no cash to pay bills. I mean, they're at that point. My impression was he took good mental notes, and then when it went to Panama City, that night he directed his staff to do something, put in motion now a mechanism to get cash to these local governments so they could pay the bill and keep the thing rolling. We don't want to shut down like Al Lawson has done in Washington. Y'all hear that? Like Al Lawson has done in Washington. You know? What do? We send Al up there, and the first thing he does is shut government down. I told him that, and he laughed, and he said he wished he had that kind of power. But then the governor's his stance on the environment, I appreciate it, and I think he's on the right track there. So my impression of him, he's for the first 2 weeks, he's putting his fingerprints on this state. We all know he's pulled back on some of the decisions that the previous governor made, and some of those you may agree with, and some you may not, but no doubt about it, he's going to be an aggressive governor, which he seemed to be very open in terms of input. Now, I don't know him that well. I'm not in that circle. When I did first time, you know, I spoke to the governor's wife, welcomed him to Tallahassee. I said, you're one of my constituents now, so if you ever need anything, call me. She understood that, and he looked at me a little puzzled, you know. But let's give him a chance. Locally, we've got a whole new regime in the city, and I think it'll be refreshing, I think, coming out. Our new mayor, John Daly, most of y'all, probably all of you know John, known him for a long time, and I believe he's a man of great integrity. I think his agenda is clear, and that is be a good mayor and do what's right for this city. The other commissioner, I think, and I've been impressed with the way they've, in a short period of time, they've worked together very, very well. So I think it'll be refreshing.
Cheers.
You want to comment
Bashir's.
On the show?
Why? Oh, Bashir's, Representative okay. Bashir's.
I'm letting him pass.
They let me pass on that one. Whoever it is, whoever wins, I'll do my best job to train them because we're going to serve 10 counties together. But let me tell you about old Curtis. I mean, Curtis. Looking at you, Curtis. Well, let me tell you about Curtis. Let me tell you about Curtis Richardson. This is not on my script, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Curtis and I ran against each other. And I think if I'm a little prejudiced, but I believe if you, that's the way campaigns should be done. And Curtis and I were friends, we're still friends, and that's the way campaigns should be run. Not what I've heard recently about some of the, this District 7 race. If I understand what's happened, that's not, it's not the way to run campaigns. But whoever wins, I'll be sharing 10 districts with them. So we sit side. So most of all these other counties, they've got three or four people representing the county. So, but when it's to us, other than Leon, it's just two of us. So whoever wins, I look forward to working with them for a couple of years.
Rocky, go ahead.
Bill, Doug Wheeler over there from the Ports Council will appreciate this, but you've basically got two ports in your district, counting Panama City and Port San Joe. Do the ports factor into the economic recovery at all? I mean, it's amazing how few people understand what ports can do for this state.
Well, if Doug would give us enough money, we're going to get up and running.
Two-way streets, there you go.
Doug has been very helpful. You know, we've been trying to get the port in Port St. Joe up for several years now, and he's been very helpful. And you got a big job. When he has to deal with all the ports, you know, around the state, I don't envy you. There's a lot of egos there, a lot of money. But he's been very helpful trying to help us get our little port in Port St. Joe up and running. It's just difficult. I mean, you got to have a rail line in. We put $5 million in the rail line trying to get that up. The Governor Scott was insistent that it was like chicken and egg. We kept saying, if you give us the money for rail and get us to clean up, dredge the port, the money will come. And the governor Scott was helpful with that as well. It's just been difficult getting that rolling. Panama City, it's doing well, that port. The thing is, and correct me if I'm wrong now, because I'm not expert on anything, certainly ports. But when the canal opens, I understand that it may increase the traffic that we have up here in this part of the state.
It will have, yeah. The canals, it opened a couple, about a year and a half ago. We're already seeing that at some of the big ports, and I think you'll see some trickle down, and Panama City certainly will benefit from that.
And we've got a tremendous opportunity in the ports. We do, especially when we get what you call a trickle-down impact on our two ports up here. Of course, I used to, tell the governor, good gracious, we need it. We need those jobs, and the port will provide a lot of jobs. Okay, give me another question.
Yeah, Curtis Baines and I served on the DEP stakeholders group for the basic management action plan to restore Wakulla Springs, and they had these throughout the state. In July, these BMAPs went into effect, but they've been challenged by groups like the Florida Home Builders and have not yet been implemented. Many scientists think that these plans are insufficient to really achieve the goal, but they're better than nothing. What can we do to make sure that those plans go into effect to start doing something to save the springs?
You probably talked to the chairman of the Senate Environment what's the other part? Natural resources. I can forget that.
Can you give out a personal?
In fact, I think I've got that on the agenda already. And I wasn't planning a question. We talked to the TAF director this morning, and that's already on our agenda for today.
Today.
Oh. We got a meeting this afternoon at 4 o'clock. It's on the agenda today. I knew I'd seen that somewhere. I got to go back and get ready for the meeting this afternoon, I can tell you. It's on there today. Come by, 4 o'clock. Curtis, you're invited, too.
Can we have, is there one more question that we can ask of the Senator?
I have a question.
Okay.
Senator, what are you planning to do to make sure that traditional public schools remain a choice for Florida students, and how do you make sure these traditional public schools receive equitable funding?
Wow.
She's tough.
Don't I have a bill on that? No, I'm serious. Let me tell you what the issue is. If we're not careful, we're going to wind up with two separate public education system. That's what will happen if we're not careful.
Yep.
Okay? There's a balance there. We all believe, again, in parental choice. But if we're not careful, we're going to have an imbalance, especially from a financial standpoint. Okay? Let's take charter schools. I supported charter schools in 1996. I thought it was a good thing if there was a struggling school in a district, if we could relieve charter school of a lot of the burdensome bureaucratic requirements that we put on top of them, let them get in and help these children, and that's the way it should be done. But what we've done is we've slipped, I believe, too far to the profit motive, if you will. There are a lot of companies making a lot of money off of charter schools, a lot of money. And that's why I said earlier, we need to make sure our tax dollars being well used. Now, also, if you look, there's several cases where these tax dollars have been misused, and we know that. So back to your question, how do we do that? Well, we've got, and that's why I've said we need to pause and let's see what we've done already. We have to insist that the traditional public schools receive the same amount of funding as the others, and all of them are held to the same standards, same levels of accountability. It's not right for a child to take a scholarship and go to a school and then come back 3 years, and there's no way to tell what that child has learned in 3 years, because you can't test them when they come back. So we've got a lot of work to do, the state does, to clean up the mess that we've created in a lot of ways for public education.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Is that
it? That's the last question. As our tradition in NEBA, we have this memorable NEBA Cup. And as you move to your mayor's job in Bluntstown, we want you to follow the lead of Governor Scott and move to the Senate in Washington, D.C., and prominently display it on your desk.
I will. I sure will. Well, and by the way, thank you. Thank you all for it. I do enjoy coming here. He gets me out of the office, and it's just fun to see, especially when I see some of you that has aged, some of you guys that have aged so much. Some of us don't show our age, okay? You and Rock, you're in trouble.
You're right. Let's give him a big hand.
Senator's going to have to ease out. I just had one announcement. Next month's meeting, NEBA program. Do you have that?
I have announcements.
You have it on this meeting?
Sit down.
Okay. Go ahead. Have at it, Catherine. The new leadership. You just don't know what's happening.
I do want to thank you all for attending. I really appreciate it. And I would like to point out the fact that Senator Richardson snuck in again, as well as Commissioner DeLoge from the County Commission. And I always thank you, Representative, for being here. If you did come in late, please see Kayla and pay for the meal, because we get charged for it. And when you look at next month's meeting announcements, which is going to be former Congressman Gwen Graham on Rebuild 850, consider paying online. It makes things move a whole lot smoother, and we would really appreciate that. Did I cover everything that you had, Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Well, with that, yes. Sure. Go ahead, Commissioner.
On January 29th at Lively, we're having a session at 5:30 in the evening on apprenticeships. There's a lot of interest locally and in this area on apprenticeships. Jay was at a planning meeting we had recently. So if you're interested, it will be primarily this time around for the construction trades, and then we'll branch out from there. But if you're interested in coming, January 29th, 5:30 in Building 8 at Lively.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Any other announcements for the good of the membership? All right. That'll be it. Thank you, guys. See you next month on February 26th.
You've been listening to a delayed broadcast of the January 22nd, 2019 luncheon meeting of NEBA, the Network of Entrepreneurs and Business Advocates. This meeting, featuring 3rd District State Senator Bill Munford, was held at the Capital City Country Club in Tallahassee. Join us again next time for another NEBA luncheon meeting on WFSU-FM.